Urban Educator podcast is designed to provide culturally relevant social and professional support to educators and community stakeholders in urban communities. Realizing that high-quality education produces intellectual citizens capable to lead 21st century innovation, educators and all involved in urban communities must be relevantly equipped with the necessary tools to educate all children effectively, but specifically those in traditionally underserved communities. Our future depends on how prepared our children are to lead it. In this episode of The Urban Educator, we focus on stress, particularly student stress, and ways to combat that. As we progress through the digital age, there are different types of challenges that our young people are facing today than we faced just a few years ago, or even generations ago. And it's important that we give these young people a platform to discuss those challenges so that as a community, as a society, and culturally, we can figure out ways to support them. I will preface this episode by letting you all know how challenging it was to record the voices of almost 30 students. But the conversation that we had was quite meaningful and insightful. So I'm with one of my favorite groups of students here at Southwest Academy. And this is a pretty stressful time of the year for you all, isn't it?
Yes.
Brianna was talking about something earlier, and I want her to kind of share that, which will kind of set the tone for our brief discussion that we're going to have today. Brianna, what were you talking about?
So I was reading this post on Instagram, as always. But anyway, I was scrolling one day, and it said that high school and middle school students have the same anxiety levels as a 1950s asylum. And I just thought that was like really weird, but I thought it was true at the same time.
Okay, why you think it was true? And what I also want you to think about is what was life like in the 1950s? When I think of the 1950s, I think of a very racist country, and I think of a very segregated educational system, right? So In 1950, that year before 1954, we know Brown versus the Board of Education. That was a big Supreme Court case where Thurgood Marshall, who happens to be from Baltimore, led the fight to make sure that our schools were integrated. That was 1954. So I want you to kind of think about what life was like for young people during that time, particularly every one of you in this room. You're a person of color. So what would life have been like for you all in the 1950s? Before you all speak, I'll tell you. There were segregated water fountains, bathrooms, schools were different, right? Oftentimes, black or colored children had to get the hand-me-down books. So after white schools and white students used books for a very long time, maybe years on end, they would then pass them down to the black schools, black students at black schools, and oftentimes those schools for blacks were like one room schools. So imagine a choir room being your entire school. Every one of your classes were in this exact same space. You ate lunch in this space, and you might go outside for your PE or whatever. So life was stressful and different outside of kids your age, like Emmett Till, being lynched, right? Drugged through dirt. And burned, his body was burned, and he was completely tore up because he was allegedly whistling at a white woman in a grocery store. People found him, they drug him, they lynched him. He was murdered, he died, and I know you all know the story of Emmett Till. So life like that then. And so now Brianna's talking about this stress level, right? Being the same as it was in 1950, we no longer are in 1950. We're in the year 2019, where we aren't integrated schools, but life is a little different. So how was life similar to being in an asylum in 1950, Breonna, help us. How was life stressful? And you're agreeing with the study, right? You're agreeing with what you saw in the post, that stress level is similar in 2019 as it was in 1950. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I feel like it's a lot of pressure that we get from, like, our teachers mixed with our parents. And then, you know, we always have those family members that come up, ask you what you're going to do with your life. And so being in a, like, I mean, I don't know how it is for other cultures, but being in a black family, they really pressure you because they feel like we're a targeted, like, skin color or culture.
And almost to the point, and I can agree with that, that you almost have to be twice as good or twice as better than some of your other peers. Would you all agree with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Some of your families have those types of expectations for you?
Yes.
Because we always have to be, like, the top of our class, the best. And, like, if we don't succeed that expectation, then we're, like, noticed as a failure. And then we have to do, like, a whole bunch of things just to, like, exceed up to those expectations. And I just think, like, it causes so much anxiety and depression. And, like, it just makes you feel bad about yourself. And, yeah, it causes those things. So, yeah.
Someone else? Anyone else want to add? Anaya? You agree with the stress level being the same. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, because, like, some people's parents, right, because sometimes my parents, even if I bring home, like, I could bring home a bunch of good grades, and then one of my grades might be bad, like a C or something like that, and they'll only get on me about that grade. They won't congratulate me about having all A's. They'll get on me about that one C that I have, and it would tell me the truth. And I feel as though they think that I'm not trying in school in that one class, or I'm not trying as best, but the curriculum and the pressure that we have is starting to really, like it's getting hard. It's really getting on us.
Since you mentioned curriculum, do you all think that the curriculum that you all are learning, do you think that it is rigorous? Do you think that it's relevant?
No.
Not all of it.
Not all of it.
Some of it's irrelevant and it's irritating.
Like right now, for the people who have geometry, we found out that we have to get a higher geometry score on the PARC testing than the high schoolers who are taking geometry now. And if we do not get a higher PARC score, we're going to have to continue taking that test. And if we have to continue that class, yeah, we'll have to continue taking that. And if we don't pass, we might not be able to graduate. So that's kind of stressful for us because not everybody in geometry or in that class really understands the subjects and everything that we learn, since it's all at a really quick pace. We're learning it the day of, and we can get a test the next day, and not everybody can grasp that as easily as others can.
Okay. That, anyone else want to contribute to stress kind of being the same as it was in the 1950s? Kyra?
Okay.
Or Jeremy, you want to say? Go ahead, Kyra, real quick. Or are you going to be a gentleman and let the ladies
speak first? Like,
you could go first.
You sure? All right. So I agree with Brianna's statement because everybody wants the younger generation to do better, and the parents and family members think that the kids should grow up to be successful and do better than they do. But at the same time, the curriculum we're learning is getting harder. We got tests, finals, and some people are in a situation where they can't graduate or they're going to fail a class if they don't do this one assignment. And it's getting stressful for us because we're still 13, 14, 15, and we still need the chance to live our life as young adults and teenagers. Yeah.
Jayla, what were you going to add?
I also agree with their statements because now it's like we don't really have room to make mistakes or get in trouble because there's so much pressure on us. And it's like our parents don't understand it because they're like, they had went to school and they understand, but it's different from when they went to school. Like they don't have or didn't have as many projects or work as we do, and they just expect so much.
Now, I'm going to push you on that a little bit. So, even when I was a student, which was not that long ago, but when I was a student, I didn't have the same type of technological access that you all have. So, you're saying that you have more to do than potentially your parents had to do, but you all have actually more resources now than we did, or more access to those resources than we did. That's fine. So how does that balance?
Okay.
If you have better access to technology, shouldn't work be easier for you?
No, because like when we get more research, like resources or more things to help us, it's just for those more things, there's like 10 times as much other work or stuff that we have to end up doing. Like, for example, our oral history project, which I find really unnecessary because they claim it's like such a high level college project and we're in middle school expected to do this. And if we don't do well on it, we fail like that one quarter. It, no matter like what other work you did, you'll fail regardless.
So I actually had a conversation with one of my mentees that is an athlete. He was saying the same thing. Well, I don't think this is going to help me be a better athlete. And I'm saying, if you have to think about plays and you've got to work on a team and with other people, you got to do all of this stuff at the same time. Algebra, geometry, these hard things that we're talking about can help you think critically. Do you all agree with that?
No.
You don't agree with it?
Some of the stuff that they teach us is unnecessary because sometimes they give us a lot of work, and I forgot which teacher, but they said one of the skills that we learned was unnecessary. So I don't see the point of taking that time to learn the skill if it's unneeded.
Okay, that's valid. And I'll take Faith, and then we're going to move on because we're actually getting ready to run out of time. Faith, what are you going
to add? All I had to add was I was really puzzled because in school they teach you, or they say they teach you, things that you have to learn in life, but they don't teach us how to do our taxes. They don't teach us how to say... They don't teach us how to talk to people in the real world, because half of us in here, we have really bad attitudes, so that's not going to get us nowhere. And,
Do you think you should have, like, a character building class?
We should,
And you should learn how to do your taxes. Yeah. I agree. You should also learn how to, you know, like,
learn how to cook and clean.
I get it. Home economics, but also the value of...
A lot of us don't know how to sew and stuff like that.
So
like
the value of sewing, but also applying for loans. Because a lot of us are going to go on to college, and hopefully because excellence. You aim higher than excellence, right? So you should be getting scholarships and applying for scholarships so you don't have to apply for a loan. But you still need to learn how to do it. Because how many of you live in houses, right? And your parents pay mortgages, right? Those mortgages generally are loans that they're paying on. So it would be important for you all to think about that. How are we going to combat the stress, right? What are some ways that young people, not just here at Southwest, but all over the country, and even adults, because right now we don't get a spring break, and Mr. McFadden is kind of stressed and needs a break too. But I'm not going to get one, just like you're not going to get one. So how do we, as a community, combat this stress thing, as Brianna was talking about? What are some ways that we can combat stress? And I want you to come closer here because this has to be on the charger now. Well, maybe I can still pass it. What are some of the ways that we can combat stress? Ashton?
I don't like
it. Well, one of you, go ahead. Tell us, talk to
us. One way we could do it is like for certain classes, something that would be helpful for the students at least would be like study groups and stuff like that for us to be able to help each other out more so when we wouldn't have a lot of pressure on us.
But you'll be able to support each other,
right? Yeah.
And get through your your classes and your studies together. All right, someone else want to add something to that? How else, Muhammad? How else can we combat this stress? Because it is kind of alarming for me to hear you all say that the stress is very similar to what it was like in the 1950s for students.
So going off of what Anaya said, you could do like study groups, and you can also ask your teacher for help. Say Miss Mayfield, she's a really great teacher. If you have any problems with like any math tests that you need to study for, you could ask her to help you with certain problems you don't know. But I was wondering how much pressure would be too much pressure. If you're in like GT American History, you already have the oral history project, which is already a lot of pressure. But say if you're also in GT Math, then what Anaya said, you also have to pass the Park test, or else you won't be able to graduate. And what if say you don't do good on both? So what would happen to you then?
Those are good questions. All right, and you're dealing with that type of stress because it sounds like you're not just in one GT class, you're in several GT classes, right? So that is some pressure. Josiah, what were you gonna add?
It's finna die, so you might wanna hurry up.
I feel like a way we could combat stress is make things a little more hands-on, because even like, say, Ms. Shank's class where we had to do dissections, instead of getting right into it where we already studied the anatomy, we had to write thousands and thousands of notes that are like really time-consuming, and we barely even get to do the dissection, and it's even more stressful because they're all a grade. So I feel like it would be easier if we didn't get too much work on it because we pretty much already know everything we need to know.
Cool, I'm good with that.
Feels really unnecessary.
Michael, you want to add something to the stress? Or Joelle, you want to add something? Or you want to add something? I do want to hear from Mr. Khan. I want to hear from as many of you as possible,
I think another way to take care of stress is try to like take a moment and, you know, just think about how you can, like, fix all your problems that you have that are causing you stress, and then go ahead and do what you need to do to reach that goal.
I agree with that. Let me see that for a second. So, 1%. So, think about the things. Come up, Joelle. Think about the things that are most stressful to you. Create a list or maybe even a journal. And then also write about ways that you can combat that stress by journaling it out. Because just right now, we talked about several things that stress us out, right? But we also should be able to have some solutions or ways that we can get through that stress. Joelle, what were you going to add?
So basically, I was going to say how teachers should, let us work at a comfortable pace, because some teachers, they try to rush the lessons and just, like, bunch everything in to one, like a few days, and then they expect us to comprehend everything we learned in those few days and, like, put it on a test. So I think they should just, like, let us work at a comfortable pace.
I agree with that. And that... Stress tip number one, teach students to journal. And actually, journaling is not just helpful for students, but for anyone. I think journaling is a great tool for reflection. One of the best things about daily journal writing is that it can take on so many forms. Teachers can use journal writing to meet specific goals, or the purpose can be wide open. Some teachers check journal writing and work on polishing specific skills. Others use journals as the one uncorrected form of writing that students produce. Some teachers provide prompts to help students begin their writing. Others leave decisions about the direction and the flow of student journaling up to the students. I highly recommend that. It's not necessarily so much about what is written, more so than simply taking the time to write. Introspection takes practice, which requires time and effort. Write as if no one else will ever read what you're writing. The benefits. First, we take some time to look at ourselves and reflect. Second, we begin to organize what can seem like a bunch of disjointed material. Writing forces us to funnel disparate thoughts into one linear stream. And finally, we're keeping a record of our progress. People who journal for a few months are amazed when they look back to see where they were. Sometimes people are amazed at how far they've come. Other times, we're surprised to find that we're barking up the same tree. Tip number two, find ways to incorporate mindfulness and breathing activities into everyday life. What is mindfulness? It's like something that is taking the country and the world by storm. And if you think about some school districts and some schools, restorative practices and mindfulness practices are strategies used to promote positive school cultures. So what is it? Mindfulness is the cultivation of moment-by-moment awareness of our surrounding environment, which is a practice that helps us to better cope with difficult thoughts and feelings that cause stress and anxiety in everyday life. With regular practice of mindfulness exercises, rather than being led on autopilot by emotions influenced by negative past experiences and fears of future occurrences, we harness the ability to root the mind in the present moment and deal with life's challenges in a clear-minded, calm, and assertive way. In turn, we develop a fully conscious mindset that frees us from the imprisonment of unhelpful, self-limiting thought patterns, and enables us to be fully present to focus on positive emotions that increase compassion and understanding in ourselves and in others. Few websites I think would be helpful for us to take note of, and that is mindful.org, pocketmindfulness.com, and Mindfulness for Teens. Here in Baltimore, Damian Cooper is leading a wonderful work with an organization called Project NUMA. If you get a chance, look it up, projectnuma.org. And the mission of Project NUMA is to breathe new life holistically into the young men that they serve by challenging them intellectually, strengthening them physically, nurturing them emotionally, and uplifting them spiritually. They're doing some really, really great stuff. So if you have questions about mindfulness, I would certainly encourage you to look up Damian Cooper, who's in Baltimore and is leading Project NUMA. Tip number three, teach students to create daily and weekly to-do lists or checklists. And of course, again, to-do lists and checklists are not just for students and young people. Checklists and to-do lists help all of us. I think of some of the most prolific leaders that I admire. They all strategically plan. And most of my mentors swear by checklists and to-do lists. Checklists can benefit students in several ways. For younger students, simple, task-based checklists can help them become accustomed to following steps, adding order to the relative chaos of learning, and offer them pathways to accomplishing complex tasks. For older students, they can do all of the above and also serve as memory aids as they work on unfamiliar or complicated tasks. Checklists help students feel in control, but also hold them accountable by removing obstacles to success, such as, I know we were supposed to do that, or I forgot to do that part, right? Checklists keep students on task. Rather than losing focus and forgetting where they left off or abandoning tasks altogether, they always know where they are in a task or a project, or at least they should know. Checklists can help communicate the details or goals of an assignment or project to other teachers, parents, or relevant community members. I would encourage all of you to visit teachthought.com. Teachthought.com has a whole slew of suggestions and tips to help students with creating checklists and to-do lists. Teachthought.com. Thank you. Now, this final tip is specifically for teachers and those who facilitate learning. It is important for us to plan for more hands-on, real-life instructional opportunities for our students. If asked, most children who have difficulty in school will cite the reason for this struggle as an inability to focus and retain the information that they've been taught. This is because a large portion of the population, adults and children alike, are kinesthetic learners. This means that people learn by doing, by taking a hands-on approach, which helps them retain information and focus on the subject matter in question. Teachers are now rising to the challenge all over the country and all over the world of creating a rewarding learning experience for their students by incorporating project-based learning as a part of the teaching curriculum. Oftentimes in elementary school, project-based learning is easier, and we seem to grow out of that in the secondary educational setting. And so I'm encouraging everyone that's listening, incorporate more projects, hands-on activities, field trips, all of that. Bring your classroom to life. Times are certainly changing, and I think it's important for all of us to think back to when we were in school. Most of us don't remember the lectures, the books, or the tests. Instead, we remember that class trip to the museum or the space camp or to the concert or to the performance space. We remember the projects we created with our own two hands, and it is more than likely that we remember the subjects we were taught from those projects. Project-based learning combines visual listening and doing as tools to help students remain interested and remember information. It can be used in all topics from math to language arts to foreign languages to robotics to engineering to everything. Teachers can devise projects like treasure hunts or science projects where students study samples under a microscope. Trips outside the classroom are excellent ways to get students excited about learning. Writing their own stories or building their own pyramids as a way to decipher how it was done can engage students and keep them excited about going to class every day. Teachers can help their students by understanding that learning is more than just lecturing and reading from books. Including their students in the learning process, that is very important. Right, figuring out how students learn and asking them how they learn and incorporating that into daily lessons. It's also important to adopt project-based learning curriculums. Finding them. Most school systems have those types of resources, so I think it's important to first start there within your own school building and then within your own school system. And then if you're not satisfied with those resources, branch out. It's important. And finally, teachers can help their students with project-based learning by providing a more hands-on approach to teaching that will encourage their students. The teacher who knows how to combine lecturing with projects is a teacher who will have a classroom that is full of students who are excited to attend class and who will retain the information taught throughout the rest of their lives. More and more teachers are realizing the importance of a project-based learning environment, which is conducive to producing an educated and productive population that is focused and driven to succeed.